Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John May.
And I'm Bob Retall.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top-selling comics and collected editions through Diamond to retailers for the year, as well as discussing some of the notable sales trends over the year. In this episode, we're going to talk about the top sales for 2010. And that's going to be comics, trades, graphic novels, and pretty much anything else under the sun we can think about. Joining me right now is Chris of the Collected Comics Library. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, John. Great to be here.
Bob's going to be joining, at least for the comics section, which may get recorded separately. He may jump in on this a little later. We're just going to kind of take it as it goes. And Chris, I always find these episodes to be a real challenge to prepare for,
right?
Much more so than the monthly ones, because, I mean, typically I'll have you, I'll have Bob, so there's twice the co-hosts. There's also twice the data in terms of both the comics and the trades. Normally we segregate those two, but when we decide to take a look back at the year as a whole, it's good to see kind of the big picture. But also, like on the trade side, we've gotten to where we have 300 items per month. Well, this time around, they released not only the top 1,000 trades, but they had the top 200 manga and 200 small press trades. Now, once you take out the overlap, that added another 44 or so trade graphic novels collected editions to the list. So we've got just a ton of data that we could go through and stuff. Obviously, we're not going to touch on all of it because there's just too much.
We could hold a seminar on the data that we have here. There's so many numbers. It's very overwhelming just to glance at these numbers and figure out what exactly they mean. So
Yeah. And a lot of this is open to interpretation. What we're going to give is our interpretation, how we're seeing the trends, what we're noticing, what we're looking for, both in terms of how 2010 was, how 2011 might be. And I figured we would start with the, because I've got this Mongo spreadsheet, Excel workbook, we'd start with the top trades by month sheet. And basically what I've got on this is I've just got each of the 12 months kind of broken down. Here's what DC did, here's what Marvel did, here's the totals, here's the non-DC Marvel stuff, just to kind of look at the big picture. And I put together a couple of little charts and stuff on this just because there comes a point where I got enough numbers in front of me, I just need to see a pretty picture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the units for the total trades on the top 300 on a month-by-month basis, there's a little bit of an upward trend. There's definitely some movement up and down over the year, but by and large, it kind of hovered between that 300,000 and 350,000 mark. Now, it got a little above that, never quite hit the 400,000. But by and large, while there's a little bit of an upward trend, it was a fairly smooth year as far as the number of units went. I mean, would you agree with that assessment?
I do. And, you know, we talked about it on our December podcast a little bit when I was trying to look at the positives in the comic industry over the year. And, you know, you do see that upward trend from January through July, and then it really dips in August, and then it goes back up, and it kind of dips again in December that we just had. And I think my assessment was right, saying things are moving into a better direction. And
all right,
there's a lot of things that can be attributed to that.
I want to point out one thing real quick, because I see where you're coming from, and I agree on a month-to-month basis,
mm-hmm.
things look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is all the forest and the trees.
Right. You talked about that last month, too. Right.
Because overall, you're looking at the size of the forest. The forest is growing. I mean, the aggregate for the month, it's looking pretty good, pretty even, maybe an upward trend, not so bad. But every time we look at, and this is more so on the comics, because it's a little hard to do this reliably on the trade side, but from a volume-to-volume comparison, that's where we start to see the drop-off.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what's going to happen is they're going to take a lower-selling item, say, ooh, that's not worth doing, replace it with something that initially is going to sell higher. That bumps up the monthly aggregates, but you still have the installment over installment, both on the comics issues and the trades volumes, usually going down.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to caution that while the month-over-month numbers may not look too bad, it really comes down to, you know, not the size of the forest, but how healthy are the trees in it.
Right.
Because there comes a point where if the tree doesn't get big enough, old enough, tall enough, whatever, it's not going to have the seeds, it's not going to go spawn more trees, and you go from a really healthy forest to suddenly it can't sustain itself and it dies in the course of a generation. Not trying to say that's going to happen with the comic and trade industry. Just saying it could. Now, we got a very similar kind of a chart that, like you said, goes between, you know, January and July and a bit of an upward trend. And then August was just not a good month. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a sharp drop and then back kind of with a bit of an arc between September, October, and December, with December being a little bit of a down month compared to, you know, both really October and November. And I think what we have seen is the top of the list on a monthly basis kind of softening, with the exceptions of a new Walking Dead or a new Fables or a new, you know, big ticket item like a Superman Earth 1. And, you know, so the top of the list kind of goes down, but the middle of the list is doing all right, you know, in terms of there's a lot of things doing that 1,000, 2,000. And the volume of product coming out is, I think, a lot of what's keeping things where they're at. I mean, would you agree with that?
I do. And it seems like more than any other year, we've been doing this for quite some time, and you're right, the number of product that has been coming out, It not only from DC and Marvel and Dark Horse and Image and, you know, IDW and Dynamite, but even the smaller publishers now are pumping out more. You know, Ad House Books, Picture Box, you know, all these other little independent companies are pushing more and more product out. And ultimately, I think that's good, because you see these small independent companies really trying to make their mark and push out really not just product, but really good product, too, that does sell.
Well, and I think that's very true. If you look at that next set of charts I've got, and I know I'm saying look at the charts and our listeners aren't going to be able to, but, you know, it gives us a common reference point here. I've broken it out by publisher, and really by publisher I mean DC, Marvel, and everybody else.
Other, right.
And that line for the other is head and shoulders above either the DC or the Marvel line. And that goes to your point of these other publishers are kicking out a lot of material on a relatively consistent basis, not necessarily the same material, but that in the collected edition area, it's really an open field and it's anyone's game. It's not just, well, you're competing against Marvel and DC and taking the table scraps. It's like, no, you've got a chance of really beating them out and... you're really fighting against everybody else for the table scraps.
Well,
I
think that's because the independent publisher can sell their product more so, or, you know, better in a collected form or a graphic novel form than individual monthly issues that, you know, the superheroes sell well in.
Well, do you think it's they sell better, or that there is a noticeable contingent of readers that have decided it's too much of a crapshoot to get the monthly stuff, because it's hard for an independent, smaller publisher to get a monthly book, be it a miniseries or ongoing, out on a regular basis. Because, I mean, life gets in the way, it's hard to find the shelf space and the retailers, whatever. It's a
right.
tough market. So are a lot of readers saying, you know, I'm not going to take that gamble that they're going to do 2 out of 12 and collect the rest in trade. I'll just wait for that trade.
Yeah, they can do that. And then also, we're getting, like I mentioned, the graphic novels, and when you see the six Scott Pilgrim trades come out, or, you know, the new Parker the Outfit come out, you know, those are all the graphic novels, and, you know, they're not on the comic side, you know, they are. It's not like Superman, which comes out in comic and in trade. Those graphic novels are always going to be on the trade side and the collected edition side as far as these numbers go, and so that will pump up their unit share, I think.
Well, and the Scott Pilgrim is a good example, because when we get over to the top trades for the year chart, or that whole worksheet with all the stuff I've got on there, I did a breakdown by publisher, and one of the columns I've got is kind of the average sales per thing. And for Oni, it's really funny, because it's like 10 times what the average is for any other publisher, because they had the six or seven, the six Scott Pilgrim items the seventh being the collection of the six, that, you know, on average, did really, really well this year because of the movie. And it's kind of the do one thing and do it well versus almost every other publisher that even if they had something that did really well, they had enough things that didn't to kind of skew that average back down to, you know, well, really an average. So I do think the Scott Pilgrim phenomena in 2010, and like you said, how it did really well on the trades, because there weren't those issues to have pre-sold, you know, cut under the market or whatever you want to call it, definitely worth pointing out. Marvel and DC, in terms of units on a month-to-month basis, did pretty interesting. They kind of had that January to July upswing for the most part. Again, things didn't do too well for them, or really anybody, in August. What was interesting, though, is DC had a bit of an upswing in terms of units in December, while Marvel had a noticeable drop. You know, with the exception of really March and December, the two were kind of following the same basic trend. March was a really strong month for Marvel, both in terms of units and dollars.
Well, we, you know, just harking back to what we talked about in December, you know, the highest ranked Marvel book in December was number 17, that Birth of Generation Hope, the X-Men book. You know, and DC had a number of books, including The Secret Origin, Sweet Tooth was in there, Brightest Day Volume 1 came out, Fables, Superman Earth 1, you know, looked strong again. So, you know, yeah, Marvel really kind of fell off the map in December.
And some of that may be the luck of the draw of just what came out. Some of it may be that, you know, maybe there's just not that much interest in that much of that middle tier of titles from some of these publishers. Because, I mean, and really, I mean Marvel and DC when I say that, because there's a very clear, this is the upper echelon of Marvel and DC titles. You know, right now at DC, that would be the Batman stuff, the Green Lantern stuff, Brightest Day. Over at Marvel, that would be, like, the Avengers stuff, maybe one or two of the X-Men books. But then you've got kind of that middle of the area where it's just, yeah, we're pumping out, a lot of stuff. And then the bottom of the, oh, yeah, they published that? You know, and it's always fun to see what falls in that category. Red Circle over at DC being a prime example.
Right.
I also did some charts on the unit share by publisher. It really shows that, you know, almost 40 to 60%, depending on the month, averaging, I'll say, around 50 of the unit share went to the non-Marvel DC stuff. And really, the difference between Marvel and DC, most months, not that big of a deal, March and December being the obvious exceptions, at least in terms of the unit shares.
Well, yeah, just that's an interesting chart right there comparing DC and Marvel, because Marvel is all over the, you know, up and down, and really goes way up in March, then it really tails off throughout the year, where DC has, you know, pretty steady within that 20% to 30% range.
Well, I think that goes back to the nature of the material, because a lot of what we see on the trade list for DC are, at least on a routine basis, are the steady sellers at Vertigo.
Yeah,
the Fables,
that's true.
The Why the Last Man, the reliable evergreen type stuff. And, you know, I was hearing somewhere that, oh, there's this rumor that maybe Vertigo will shut down. And it's like, why on earth would they do that? The only reason I could think is the editor, Karen Berger, you know, wins the lottery and retires or something, you know? Because as long as she has been there, they have done a really good job picking good properties and particularly having on the trade side, because they're doing all right on the comics, but not lighting up the top of the charts, but they are the backbone of the trade program for DC.
They certainly are.
Marvel has nothing of the sort. You know,
they're trying with the Icon line, it seems. I mean, if anything, that would be their equivalent, you know, quote unquote, but it's not, you know, what Bendis has with the Icon line over there.
That feels to me more like an equivalent of Wildstorm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
look what happened to Wildstorm.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, you know.
I mean, the thing with Vertigo is they really kind of pushed some of the boundaries, did some different stuff, went for more of a literary ish approach. I mean, they had some deep stories in some of these things. Yeah, some of it was light, fluffy, whatever, but they have, I mean, with Hellblazer, the longest ongoing monthly title that hasn't been rebooted, restarted, revectored, retooled, revamped. I mean, I cannot think of a DC Universe book that has been going along the same narrative thread, you know, not story, but you know what I mean, same trajectory, same, you know, overall basic direction for the length of time a Hellblazer has.
Do you think Marvel could start up a Vertigo line? More adult-based, 18 and over, rated R title, you know, to have Vertigo titles or Walking Dead-type material?
Oh, well, on the one hand, obviously any publisher could start that up.
Yeah.
That having been said...
But, I mean, Vertigo has set the bar. That's what I'm... I mean, could Marvel attain something like that?
They could attain it. They could even surpass it if they had the right editor and the right person in charge. Realistically, do I think that company culture, as I perceive it, could generate that kind of an imprint and make it thrive successfully? No, not really.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, the vibe I get out of Marvel and stuff, I mean, they're doing some great stuff. They've got some books I love. They have some creators that could really do gangbusters on that kind of a thing. I mean, if they were to basically, you know, tap into a couple of the people who've gotten some success over in the indie sector and kind of, you know, I don't say burn bridges, but are disenfranchised for whatever reasons over with DC, and say, okay, hey, Greg Rucka, let's take your Queen and Country, let's take your this, let's use that as a, you know, one of our little parts of our little, you know, pseudo-Vertigo line. Let's go take, you know, maybe Powers fits into that because it's a little bit different than, you know, Superior and some of the other stuff we're seeing out of Icon.
Well, here's what I'm kind of going with. You know, they've got their, what they call their signature author line with Stephen King, right?
Right.
And a few others. They've got their Icon line, which is more of adult tone in nature with Bendis and Kick-Ass. And they also have their Max line, which is their adult line. And, you know, I'm thinking they could take all three of those and wrap them all up into one separate, not a separate, but their own, instead of having three entities, having one. Because it looks like DC does that with Vertigo. They've got some superheroes, they've got some noir titles, and they've got some very independent titles going on, just like those three over at Marvel. And I think it would behoove Marvel to grab those three properties and put them under one flagship.
I disagree with that. I think there's a fundamental difference between the famous author stuff versus the Icon stuff versus the Max. And I think having those as different imprints makes sense. None of those, in my opinion, fit into what I kind of consider that nebulous Vertigo area of titles, because the Vertigo stuff tends to be a little darker, a little more supernatural, a little more serious, a little more twisted. Not to say some of these other titles aren't, but I mean, the Max stuff to me is gratuitous violence, and that's my unbelievably biased opinion. No doubt we've got listeners thinking John's totally wrong on this, and hey, I may well be. But there tends to be more the profanity and let's blow stuff up in that than you get in your average Vertigo-type book. I mean, Fables, one of, I think, the more important Vertigo books these days beyond Hellblazer. Can you see Fables fitting into the Max line?
No, but they can... But, I don't know, I mean, Yeah, I know, but you've got, over at Vertigo, you've got your different degrees, though.
True.
You know, you've got your Unknown Soldier, you've got your I don't know.
And I see where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, you see where I'm coming from. I mean, DC has got DC and Vertigo, whereas Marvel has got Marvel and then Icon and Max and, you know, all these other things. And
but
I think those three, I think the Icon, Max, and the authors, they're that 18 and over crowd. They're not for the 15-year-olds.
And that's true. I just think they're for different segments of the 18 and over crowd.
But I think Vertigo is too.
I think Vertigo is a little bit more cohesive in certain respects than I see those areas.
Okay.
And in fairness, DC has had a number of other imprints over the years, from CMX, Helix, Wildstorm, Johnny DC, you know, a few others, I think, over time. Vertigo is the one that really has been successful. And they're really, the difference is they're looking at the long-term stuff.
Okay.
Because we've got some of these trades that go, you know, multiple volumes.
I just think when you look at Madame Xanadu to Sweet Tooth to DMZ, very different titles.
And that's true.
But yet they're all under the Vertigo.
That's true, but I also would not necessarily say Madame Xanadu, for me at least,
wouldn't count. Or House of Secrets or whatever, you know.
Well, I was going to say it wouldn't count as a superhero title.
I don't think it is either. No.
Yeah. I'd be hard-pressed to name any title they've had over there in a long time that would be a superhero title.
But I wouldn't say that Punisher Max is a superhero title.
No, and I would agree with that.
Punisher in the 616 is.
Yes.
Yes, because he interacts with other superheroes. But, I mean, I don't know. And now that, you know, who knows. But I didn't mean to go off on a tangent. I'm just saying that creatively, I think Marvel could do something different.
They could do a lot better with their branding.
Branding, right.
I don't think any of their imprints has the strong identity or recognition or perceived value that Vertigo has.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thinking maybe under one umbrella. But, you know, I could be wrong. You know, I think it might be a decent move. But
personally,
you know, it's a good debate, you know.
Yeah, I would leave some of them where they are, but I think, like, the Famous Author stuff, they should be pushing that more in the bookstores.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
So I think they could take what they've got, position it better. I would like to get to where I can do these breakdowns by imprint and really kind of see.
You've been talking about that for years.
I know, but I'm hoping to actually get it done someday. We'll see if that happens.
You have to win the lottery, not Karen Berger.
Yeah. That's true. I agree with that. So the other two charts I have here are, I think, kind of interesting. One of them is the floor, and that's basically where does the bottom of the 300 end up every month. And it really kind of varied between a little under 300 to about 500 units over the course of the year, with a little bit of an upward trend. Again, big difference between the year low in February and the high in March.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, again, that's the bottom of the list. And that, for the year, you total those up and you get 4,529 units. The reason that's relevant is when we go talk about the top trades for the year, anything that did that 4,529 units or under could have been under the radar the entire year, never showing up on the monthly list.
So you're telling me by this chart that the worst selling item to show up in the top 300 occurred in February?
Yes.
Do we know what that book is?
If you give me a minute.
I think I can find it, too. I'm just curious to see what it is. I think that would be funny to find out, you know, what is the floor? What is the bottom that we have going on here?
I am seeing it as a Viz title. I can't even pronounce it. Kakashi, okay. Volume 20, maybe?
Okay. And how many units do we have?
287.
287. That's our floor, 287.
Yeah.
Okay.
With whack, 200, whack.
280 people have that book.
Well, that's how many shipped.
Well,
that
that's
month.
How many were pre-ordered. Right, yeah, no, yeah.
So, again, it could have done another 4,000 over the
it
course
could have.
Of the year.
No, you're right. You're right, yeah.
But one of the other ones that was a low seller that month was 300 the Hardcover with 290 units of reorder activity.
Now, but that was reorder, yeah.
But that's also 300, the title, the property. Could have been doing about that every month.
Yeah, right.
So some of this stuff, and in past years we've seen DMZ is a really good example of this, where it just does not show up on the list, but at the end of the year it's like, wow, look at how it placed.
Right.
I think a couple of years back, I forget if it was 2008 or which year, like two-thirds of the units that it had on the year-end list didn't show up on, you know, were not ones that showed up on the monthly lists.
Mm-hmm.
So two-thirds of the sales were under the radar. And that's one of those where that slow and steady can certainly win the race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other chart I've got here I found really interesting. I took the total dollars, divided it by the total units to get the weighted price. So this is the average price where those that sell more kind of influence it more than those that sell less. That makes sense?
Yes.
Note that upward trend. It started at $18.27 in January. It went to a high of $20.32 in November to go down to $20.02 in December. But what that says is, on average, what people are buying is costing them more by, you know, about $1.75.
Well, prices did go up. I know, just looking at the essentials and the showcases, they shot up by $3.
Yeah.
Everything was at $16.99 for the longest time, and because I made a point of noting that at one of my podcasts, that it went up to $19 or $19.99, and we have not seen it go down at all. And I don't know if that was a reflection because of the monthly titles went up by a few bucks, and they also went up on the trade side and stayed there. I mean, I don't see any recalls from DC saying we're going to roll back prices on our trades. You know, archives keep going up to $60, and Masterworks are at $60, and, you know.
Well, I think you do have to expect those prices to creep up over time. That's just the nature of things. But I don't know that we ever had on the collected edition side a jump of like 25% or something.
Right.
Like we had over on the comic side when it went from, you know, a penny under $3 to a penny under $4. So I think if you had that kind of a huge jump where it went from $60 to $75 or something, or, you know, whatever the equivalent would be, people would say, hey, wait a sec. And then at that point, DC may actually say, well, okay, maybe we went too far. Marvel, of course, would say, hey, pay it. But that's just the way it is.
Is this also the way to price because of more higher ticket items came out this year than in previous years? And speaking of like the $100 omnibuses and...
I didn't actually do... let me see.
What would that be? That would be a factor, though.
That would be a factor depending how many they sold.
Right, okay.
On the comic side, I did a breakdown by price. I did not do that on the trade side.
Okay.
So I think we had some higher ticket items, but... frankly, I think we had a lot fewer this year than we have had in some past years. Because we had a couple of years where we would get quite a few of those absolutes and stuff.
Right, the Sandman ones, yeah.
Exactly, and I think those have really kind of have become a lot less frequent.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to jump into the list of the top trades for the year?
Let's do it, yeah.
Okay, starting us off on the top of the list. Now, actually, before we actually talk about the top of the list, let's talk a little about the nature of this list. This is a list of the top 1,000 items. Again, there are a couple of things under that that were on the manga list or the small press list or whatever. So there are some gaps after you get to 1,000. In the past years, what I've had to do is sum up what I had from the monthly list, say, oh, well, this is how much it must have done. And it had each item had to do as well or better than the item below it based on, well, this did, you know, 8,000 and the one below it did 9,000 or something. Well, that means the one that did 8,000 had to actually do above that 9,000, so it had to do another 1,000, so I'd add that in, et cetera, et cetera. This year I didn't have to do that. The difference is this year not only did they give us a lot more data, they actually gave us an index value for the year. So I was able to take that, use that to unlock the list, multiply things out as appropriate, and actually get estimated values for all of these. So we've got a lot more granular data, and we don't have what we've had in past years where it would kind of stair-step in odd things based on what was known, what was under the radar, reorder sales or what have you. So we still have the estimated total reported units, which is what's coming from the monthly lists in aggregate. We then have the unreported units, which is the difference between the estimated monthly totals and then what I calculated for the yearly. That kind of makes sense?
Yes, yeah. I'm just kind of looking down the list, and I couldn't find a Marvel title. I know we're going to do the top 10 and everything, but Marvel, besides Kick-Ass, didn't come in until number 40. I thought that was really way off for Marvel there.
Well, it's... yeah.
But then you look at what came out in the higher placed items, and it's a lot of Walking Dead, it's a lot of Scott Pilgrim, it's a lot of Blackest Night, you know,
it's so a lot of things,
Fables, you know.
It's a lot of the things we would expect to top the list every month.
Buffy, yeah, exactly.
Comes out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the top of the list here with Walking Dead Volume 1, with the TV show...
Wait, let me ask you this. Would you have guessed that would be number one?
No, probably not, actually. I would not have expected something that was entirely reordered to top the list, much less by the margin it did. However, I'm not surprised, particularly given, one, it's Walking Dead, which has always been a strong seller. Two, it's got the TV show to really generate new interest in it.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it really makes perfect sense that it topped the list. And with the TV show kind of kicking it to a whole nother level, I mean, Walking Dead, I really think, is what's going to be what Kirkman is just known for. That is, you know, his Citizen Kane-ish, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
His signature title. And no matter what brilliant stuff he may do later, this is going to be it. And then, so from the comic side, he'd already kind of cemented a certain level of continued sales just because that title has really clicked with people. And then you open that up to the whole TV audience through the TV show.
Right.
You're going to get a lot of interest and stuff. So, I mean, if this doesn't stay on the list pretty much every year from here on out, maybe not at the top of the list, but well positioned with most of the volumes on it, I mean, particularly now that we got 1,000 items, I would be shocked.
This is our new Watchmen for this generation, right?
No.
Maybe, you know.
The key difference is Watchmen is a single installment volume.
True.
It's done in one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And
No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant an item that we're going to see on the list. Like, we can always look and see Watchmen on our list. Now we'll be able to see Walking Dead Volume 1 on our list.
That's kind of what I'm going for. I don't think it's Volume 1 is my point. I think Walking Dead.
We will see
the run of Walking Dead. At least in trade, maybe the hardcovers too.
What about Scott Pilgrim? You think that'll run its course?
I think it's much more likely to run its course.
Yeah.
That's something that falls more into a cult favorite. There's a difference between having a movie and having a TV series that's got a second season and presumably much more potentially coming on its way.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, the fact that it topped the list with 43,936 units, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You know, and all but I think around 11 of those are ones I can account for on the monthly list.
I'm still holding up my Scott Pilgrim Absolute Edition.
Yeah. That would be cool.
$100.
Yeah. And then we'd have 8 Scott Pilgrim things
on the
list.
There you go.
One thing to note is with these unreported units, because we're dealing in estimates both on the yearly side and on the aggregate of the monthly, when you see unreported units as in here, like I've got the 11, that's a unit a month. That's the noise of the estimates. So we're going to have some of that as we go through this. But really, if you filter the list by Walking Dead, there is just a ton of it on the list. Let's do that real quick, and then we can just kind of ignore Walking Dead after that. How about that?
That sounds good.
Because there is 20 items.
The compendium's on there, too, yeah.
Yeah. 20 items, which I believe is all the trades, all the hardcovers, and the compendium.
Yep.
For a total of 317,510 units.
Unbelievable.
So, that's a lot. But, you know, well-deserved for Kirkman. The next item on the list is a fairly noticeable drop of, what, about 7,000 units, a little over?
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is the one you like to talk about so much. That is... You're not going to say the name. You're going to make me do
what,
it.
What, Kick-Ass?
Yeah, that's the one.
No, that's fine. I don't care.
It's this whole profanity thing I have such a problem with.
Oh, jeez.
I know. But that's a case where it's got a movie. It'll support it, but I don't think it's going to get this long-term support that, like, a Walking Dead through the TV show is going to get. That one, I am surprised, is in the second slot. 36,738 units. Pretty impressive. Again, the movie helps. But would not have guessed shy of actually adding up the monthly numbers. I would not have said, yeah, that's where I would have put it.
We'll talk about your ultra-violent book. You know, this is it right here, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, there's an audience for that.
There definitely is. Yeah. And, you know, I think it also helps that the sequel is out right now and coming out. I'm sure that's helping with the sale of this book, Volume 1.
Yeah, probably not hurting. I think it's, if I had to guess which was the bigger factor, I would probably say the movie, personally.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the fact it's got a sequel is going to give it a bit more longevity, too.
Well, you know, I was surprised that they even announced a sequel with this book, because it seemed like it was going to be this series and then it, and then it got so popular with the movie that they ramped up the sequel to it. And I don't, have you heard if they're going to, if this is going to be an ongoing or anything like that?
I was figuring another mini series, but if it's profitable, they'll keep doing it.
They'll keep doing it, right.
And yeah. I'm surprised we haven't seen a second Wanted mini series.
Right.
But give it time.
Mm-hmm.
Rank 4, we've got Scott Pilgrim. Again, every one of those is on the list, and actually most of them are fairly high on the list. This is one where the average sales, like I said, was around 20,000 units or something. It's interesting that Volume 6 is the highest one on the list, with 33,632 units. I would have figured number 1 would have beaten that out, but really it's not that much further behind, down at rank 6, with 31,106 units. So only about a, 2,500 unit gap or so?
Right.
Which is not too bad. But that's one where really the only stuff from Oni that showed up on the list was Scott Pilgrim. And, you know, hey, if you're going to have something, at least have something successful.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other one, which I'm really curious to see how is going to have done over the course of 2010 in the mass market bookstores, is at rank 5 there, and that Superman Earth 1 hardcover, having mm-hmm. done 31,880 units. So really, once you factor in the titles we've already just talked about, I mean, that covers the top 11 books over the course of a couple of different volumes and stuff, and also covers the only titles to have done over 20,000 units. Now, granted, some of the Scott Pilgrim and Walking Dead also did under the 20,000 units, but those are kind of the big titles for the year, which I'm not, totally surprised by.
No, not either.
Rank 12, we've got Blackest Night's hardcover with 19,236 estimated units over the course of the year. And then Fables Volume 13 with 18,597 units. And then the only other title that we haven't talked about in the top 20, down at rank 19 with Serenity Shepherd's Tale, having done 14,751 units.
That was a surprise to see. I did not expect that to be that high.
I'm a little, I don't say disappointed, but frustrated it's so high. Because, one, I had problems with kind of the backwards nature of the story, where they kept flashing further and further back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a glorified comic book and a hardcover. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have the length, I think, to justify the price or being on this list. I enjoyed it to a certain degree. But yeah, I'm a little surprised it did as well as it did.
Is there another Serenity title in the works right now?
I do not know.
Yeah, well, there ought to be, you know, if it sold this well.
Yeah, and again, I love Serenity and Firefly, yeah. So love to see more. Chew Volume 1 at rank 21, having done 13,634 units. And then, for some reason, and I'm not entirely sure why, my system didn't pick up any of the 11,872 units that showed up on the monthly list for Unwritten Volume 1, but over the course of the year it sold 12,616 estimated units.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's another one of the Vertigo titles, not surprised to see on the list here.
Did you read that?
Yeah, I like it.
I didn't pick it up yet.
I think it's really good. It is Harry Potter-ish in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
But very meta-textual. It's about a guy whose father wrote a series of Harry Potter-like books. The lead is named the same as this kid, or this guy. He's now, you know, well out of college or whatever. So he's kind of the celebrity for kind of being himself, if you will.
Right.
But he realizes there is power in story, and that whole playing with the concept of narratives really, really interesting stuff. And to me, something that is so quintessentially Vertigo. It's something I definitely think people should check out.
Yeah, I do. I heard nothing but good things about it. So, was that part of their noir line or Vertigo? That wasn't Vertigo Crime.
No.
Okay.
No, it was not.
Okay.
So really, from here we get kind of the usual stuff. What is really depressing to a certain degree is by the time we hit rank 35, that is the last item to do over 10,000 units.
Yeah.
Go a few units down, and oh, really anything below 10,000. The next three units are doing a little between 9,000 and 9,200. So, I mean, there's a gap there. Nothing did between that 9,200 and 12,200. You know, so I always find those kinds of gaps kind of odd. But
right.
Really, things start to drop off pretty quick. You know, we go from, again, that top item having done nearly 44,000 units to, you know, three dozen items later, we're under 10,000 units. And really, it's not that much further before we drop under 8,000, 7,000, 6,000. This is kind of what I was talking about with the kind of that mid-list, mid-tier kind of section. We got a lot of things that are doing okay. Because really, this entire area is things that are selling on average two or three copies per store. That's not bad. That's not great. The other thing worth talking about is at rank 167, that's the first item at which things from here down could have come through entirely under the radar all year long, never once having shown up on the list, having done that 4,529 estimated units. Now, in this case, we actually have Invincible Iron Man's third trade paperback having done 45,028 units, the majority of which, a little under 4,000 units, did show up on the monthly lists. So you could place pretty well over the course of the year, staying under the radar the entire time. And I always find that very interesting. There are a couple that I think did it, and the one that I'm certain did it, which I found really surprising, and I'm like, no, really, my system must be messed up. And I'm like, oh, no, wait, that's true. You go to rank 256, we got Fables Volume 9. Now, we talk on a regular basis how Fables is always showing up on the list, how it's doing pretty well, whatever. Fables Volume 9 never once showed up on the list of the top 300 over 2010.
It didn't?
Nope.
Huh.
And here it is, ranked 256. That's amazing. And it's based on this. It's doing little under, say, 300 a month.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
That's pretty steady sales. So this is one of the reasons why you look at that month to month, how's the aggregate doing, and it's a little misleading because there's quite a bit happening under the radar, and the dynamics of that, you know, it's this once a year kind of visibility that we get on some of that. And that's part of why I enjoy going through these year-end numbers, but also why they're kind of a little aggravating and frustrating to aggregate and put together. Because it's like, well, is this right? And there's so much doubt in my mind as to, did I just mess up with my system? Or did it really not show up all, you know, 12 months, and I just didn't really realize that?
So, just so I'm aware, wherever you have the highlighted yellow zero, that did not show up at all, right?
The zero highlights automatically the way I've got this formatted. In theory, that means it didn't show up every month. The reason I stress in theory is if you go back up to that unwritten
right, volume, right, yeah.
That one, it's like, no, that's too high. I checked, and it showed up on the list. Now, part of it with the first volume of something, what tends to happen is it'll show up as unwritten, the trade paperback. Then, by the time it's on the year-end list, it'll have shown up eight other times. Another volume have come out, and they'll have retroactively be referring to it as unwritten Volume 1 trade paperback.
Okay.
And my system isn't assuming a Volume 1, and maybe it should be. For these things.
Is that what happened with Archie's Married Life?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, with 1,044 or whatever items on this list and 3,600 items across the monthly lists, have I cross-checked every one of these? No.
No, right.
just don't have the time for that and have not automated that part of it.
Yeah.
And again, part of why this monthly process or this year-end process is not fully automated to a large, really to any major degree, is because every year they change the nature of the data, the volume of the data, the format of the data. And it's always good stuff. I love the fact they've given us so much information. I love the index values. But it means it's a bit of a from-scratch process every year.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom of the list, really at that 1,000 mark, comes in at 1,589 units. We've got partial visibility down to around 1,464 units. So we can really see pretty... Well, not really. We can see amazingly far down the list this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were there any titles in particular you were kind of curious how did, or?
For me, no, not really. I mean, everything is really interesting to take a look at. You know, it. I'm kind of intrigued on, you know, the under the radar stuff too. You know, like the you know, Smurfs come to mind. That was a big hype this year, and you know, just you know, a few others. You know, Fell showed up back on the list, which looks like Steve Niles. I think Steve Niles and Fell. Yeah, and Ellis are gonna pick that up again and continue on with Fell from Image, which is good to see.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the other one that tends to do again the under the radar stuff, and that's DMZ.
Yeah,
this is
there we
by
go.
Brian
yeah.
Wood. We've got 8 volumes that showed up. They did between a high of an estimated 227 units through Diamond to comic book stores to what looks to be a low for the year of a volume that did 1,893 units. Again, this is just through Diamond to comic stores. Obviously, his royalty statement is going to show a much bigger number because he's getting it through... And this is Diamond Comics distribution. These things are no doubt selling through Diamond Book Distributions, which is another channel through the mass market, yada, yada, yada. Just want to be clear on that because I know that's something that Brian himself tends to point out of, well, this isn't the whole picture. He is entirely correct on that.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is the only two that showed up over the course of the year on the monthly lists were Volume 1 and 8. Now, what we've seen in the past, and this goes in the same basic direction, is kind of that V-shaped sales curve if you were to plot out all the volumes of a series. You would have, starting with volume 1, a high number, it would slowly trail off till you get to a low somewhere in the middle, then it would start to go back up until you get to the most recent version. This title, 5, seems to be, at least in the direct market for 2010, where that kind of pivot point is. And I find that kind of V-shaped sales curve across the volumes of a title very interesting. And it makes sense because you've got people who are coming in, trying the first things. So that makes sense why the first volume is always going to do pretty well. There's always people coming on board. Some of them are going to read that volume, go to the next. Some are just going to have it sit on their shelf for a while before reading it and going to the next. Some may read it and not go to the next. But you're going to have those, so there's a little bit of a trailing off, a natural kind of reader attrition, because it takes time to read a trade. And then you're going to have those who are getting the most recent volume, and those who may just be a couple of volumes behind or whatever, explaining kind of that back half of that curve. So it makes sense, but it's always kind of fun to see how that pans out. And again, the Vertigo titles tend to be a good place to look for that, because we usually have so many on the list every month. Volumes for a given title. But across all of those, that's 24,394 estimated units, as best I can tell. And again,
how do you think, you know, we've talked a lot about the Boom Studios this year. How do you think, you know, Irredeemable and Incorruptible fared overall this year?
In terms of the comics or the trades?
In terms of the trades. I mean, you've got Irredeemable Volume 1 showing up a rank 81 with... 6,491 units, and then on the low side, you've got the second title, Incorruptible, Volume 3, which came out late. It came out in December, I know, so not a whole lot of reorder activity yet, but at rank 553 with 2,226 units.
Well, let's talk Irredeemable first. It had that lower price first volume at the $9.99. It had we've got 5 volumes on the list. That's quite a few, actually. And it did a total of 24,729 units over the course of 2010 and all of these volumes. That's pretty good. Now, we then look at Incorruptible, its companion title, and it's only got the three volumes, and it did 10,405 units across all of those. And it's interesting, we've got number one doing really well at the 5,155, two at 3,024, and then three at 2,226 units. So that's one where it seems like it doesn't have enough volumes out to have got kind of that V-shaped curve yet.
Right.
So people are pretty much able to stay current with it. And I think both of those are doing, you know, fairly well. I mean, they were in the, really all of those, in the upper, well, really for the most part, the upper third of the top 1,000 sellers for the year. Incorruptible Volume 3 was down at rank 553, so in the lower half. Incorruptible Volume 2 at rank 340, so really that and Irredeemable 5 at 334, falling just outside of that top third. But really everything else there was in the top 200. I think Mark Waid should be very happy with that. I think the people at Boom should be very happy with that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Now, the other stuff over at Boom that showed up on the list... We've got the Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck Volume 1 hardcover, which is interesting. It's only the first one and not the second one that showed up. But really, we've got that. Above that, we've got Disney's Alice in Wonderland. We've got Darkwing Duck. We've got Incredibles, Seven Psychopaths, Muppet Show, Amory Wars, and Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3, Toy Story, Muppet Peter Pan. All of these doing between about 1,400 and about 1,824. So pretty... decent, you know, kind of clustering, if you will, in terms of the volume. And really, I think all of those are something that, you know, are respectable numbers. Muppet Show and Amory Wars having been under the radar all year.
Yeah. Well, they've also had a weird scheduling, too, because I remember a few of these titles were announced and, you know, they say they come out in April, or they're announced for April, and they don't show up till June for whatever reason. So a few books, you know, Incorruptible and Irredeemable came out pretty much on time, but the other titles were kind of scattered this year as far as getting them out on time.
Yeah. Well, and again, Irredeemable and Incorruptible account for about half the volume, or half the units on the list for Boom.
Yeah, so they better get them out, right.
It's not so much they better get them out, but I think the fact they get them out on a regular basis helps it get some momentum, helps it build some interest. You know, the more things come out, the more likely people are to talk about them, buy them, etc.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to touch on IDW real quick?
Yeah. Now, last year when we were talking about this, I actually listened to bits and pieces of that episode on my drive in to work, knowing we were going to be recording today. One of the things we were talking about is IDW had just made, one of their people had made that blog post of, hey, we're in the big four. And we talked about,
Chris Ryle put that on his blog.
Yeah. Well, we now have a full year to kind of judge how well they've done. And I think it's been a very good year for IDW by and large.
Yes.
They've come out with a lot of fun stuff, a lot of really good stuff, a couple of things that sold really well, a couple of things that sold, a couple of things that I think they've lost a little momentum on. You know, it's a little hard to tell in some areas. Richard Stark's Parker the Outfit, 8,015 units over the course of the year. Really good. That made the top 100. Actually, it made the top 50 for the year. They should be pretty happy with that. After that, their next highest item is the third volume of Lock and Key, down at rank 304 for the year, 3,219. Then they've got stuff going down to just under 1,600 units. And again, we've got a couple of Lock and Key volumes. We've got Parker the Hunter, Little G.I. Joe, Classic G.I. Joe, 30 Days of Night, Transformer Prime, Transformer All Hail Megatron, the Transformer Ongoing, Kill Shakespeare, Angel After the Fall, Sam Keith's Sketchbook, the Bloom County Complete Library. It's interesting some of the things that are not on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, we're seeing quite a bit of the G.I. Joe, the Transformers. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a strong property. It's a little surprising. It's the classic G.I. Joe, not some of the newer stuff.
Right. Star Trek?
The Star Trek, I think, is one of the things they've really got an opportunity to do better with.
Right.
I think it's a strong property. They're doing some good stuff. It's just not finding an audience as much as I think could based on the number of Star Trek fans that are out there. Doctor Who is another one I think that
that's could right. find they have a Doctor Who. Audience. I forgot about that. Yeah,
I read through all 18 issues of the first volume, the David Tennant Doctor, and they're just now starting one up with Matt Smith. I'm really enjoying it. It's really good stuff. It's got a good feel, a good flavor. It's a lot of fun. By and large, these things are doing much, much lower than I think they should be. Based, again, Doctor Who is a huge property. Star Trek is a huge property. Not all these people are going to read comics. Yeah, I get that. But, really? I mean, some of the sales levels on some of these are, in some cases, just a few thousand at best.
Right, right.
Well, again, witness, none of the Star Trek or Doctor Who stuff showed up on this list, and we go down to, 16,000 and a little under on some of these.
But we have seen Star Trek on the list before, though, throughout the year. It's shown up a little bit.
Yes, you could show up many times on the list and not have made this cut.
And not have made this cut, right, exactly.
And I suppose if I'd been thinking, I would have added those into this and said, well, this is what else we know.
Yeah, that's
even
all right,
though it's not on the list.
We can go back, right?
Yeah.
No, I've never read Lock and Key.
Neither have I.
Oh, man.
Out of all the things they have on the list here, I don't think I've read a single one of these.
Really?
I read some of the early Angel After the Fall. I read a few issues when Willingham got on it, but that would be the only one.
I've got The Outfit. I got The Hunter. In fact, I reread it back to back. I've got 30 Days of Night. I got the uber giant slipcase volumes of those. Those are nice. Volume 1 of Bloom County I have, but not volume 2 or 3. Yeah, and that's it. And I read classic G.I. Joe when it was at Marvel way back when in the day. But that's it. Yeah.
Well, let's jump down.
But I did pick up IDW Star Trek. I do have other imprints from the Library of American Comics that they have been putting out. So,
Yeah, I mean, they're doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's go down to row 1057, where I've got kind of the breakdown over this list by publisher.
All right.
Because I think it's very interesting.
1056?
Yeah, down in that area.
Okay.
So you see the list where I've got the publishers, the percent, the number of items, all that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what I did here is I basically said everything I've got up in that list above that covers the top 1,000 items plus a few dozen after that with some gaps and whatnot, and said, okay, out of all of those, what publishers do we have? How many items do we have for each publisher? What percentage of the list is that? What's the total units, the estimated dollars, all that kind of stuff. And I listed them alphabetically because, well, that was easy. But man, DC did gangbusters, accounting for over 33% of the list, 351 items. Now, again, that's across, more than just the 1,000. It's the 1,044 or whatever. And everything under the 1,000 is going to be non-Marvel and DC by definition, because those are the manga and the small press stuff. So, I mean, DC had more units than anybody else. Marvel had 27.8% of this with 290 items, so not bad. Dark Horse had 121 items, accounting for 11.60% of the list. Again, this is by count, so they did pretty well. IDW, though, only had 17 items on the list.
Right.
So
they pumped out more books than that, I'll tell you that.
IDW is doing some good stuff. I certainly think they are one of the key publishers to be watching. They're in kind of what I consider the really exciting tier of publishers. I mean, Marvel and DC are Marvel and DC. They're the top dogs, period. You got a couple of these other publishers that are one-trick ponies for all intents and purposes. Now, they may be really fun tricks and really cool to watch, but that's all they do. But then you've got a couple of these others that are constantly kind of, I don't want to say struggling to invent or reinvent themselves, because that's not the case, but are trying to really kind of push the envelope, grow, kind of get past that critical mass, that threshold, and get to be more than they are, but are still very much more than those down at the bottom, if you know what I mean.
Are you talking about Dynamite?
I was going to say Dynamite, Boom, IDW. Image and Dark Horse kind of fall into this area, although, mm-hmm. you know, it's basically the non-Marvel and DC premier publishers, Dark Horse, Image, IDW, and again, in the back half of previews, Boom and Dynamite are the main ones I look at in this area.
Right.
So
I would lump, like, WW Norton and Run and Quarterly and Fantagraphics all into your major off, you know, kind of like the beatnik independent publishers there with all what they do, you know.
Again, to me, those are the one-trick ponies by and large. Technically, really? They may have more than the one trick, but you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
they're kind of, you know what they are.
Oh, that's what I mean. You know the kind of books they put out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And again, there's nothing wrong with some of that stuff. There's some of these that are really good at what they do.
Oh, but particularly Fantagraphics, yeah.
They're not what I would consider the major growth opportunity for the industry.
No.
These are not where the new up-and-coming properties and talent is going to come from.
Right.
This is not where you're going to see them really pushing the envelope of what comics can do. IDW, I think...
Well, I might disagree with that. I mean, I think they're doing some really interesting stuff with those companies, and also, like, Top Shelf as well.
Let me rephrase. They're not pushing the envelope of what it can do commercially. They may well be pushing the envelope on what it could do artistically.
Yeah, and creatively, right. Okay.
So, and that's a very important distinction, so thank you for calling me on that. Keep me honest. Somebody's got to... IDW, though, has had pretty much a full year because they got into the front half of previews. I forget exactly when that was. Early in the year, though.
Early in the year, right.
Prior. And we were promised by the end of 2010 they would have the final order cutoff. They'd be playing with the big boys, essentially, in terms of acting like a premier publisher, since that's not what they are. They still don't have the final order cutoff thing going, as far as I can tell. So... granted, some of that may be on Diamond, not on IDW, but the point being, they are a premier publisher. They need to start acting like a premier publisher. Certainly, I think in terms of their lineup, their diversity, the stuff they're coming out with, like the Infestation kind of crossover with the licensed properties, content-wise, editorial, I think they are acting like a premier publisher. I think they need to step it up a little, maybe in, again, some of the business practices, like the final order cutoff, and they don't quite have what I would consider kind of the top-notch sales levels over the course of the year to really justify that claim of, hey, we're part of the big four.
Mm-hmm.
Because I look at the unit sales and stuff this year, and man, they're not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, again, DC doing a million and a quarter units over the course of the year just for the items on this list for the trades... can't really compete with that when you only have about 41,000 units all said and done on this list for IDW.
Well, you know, Lock and Key is going to be a TV show at Fox. I mean, it's got the green light to do a pilot. So maybe that'll help them the way Walking Dead has helped Kirkman, you know.
And it very well may. And I think IDW, again, creatively has good properties, both what they're licensed, what they have in-house.
Mm-hmm.
They have the potential of just really shooting up in the sales charts and making a bigger name for themselves and really being a major player.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where that sort of quote-unquote overnight success can take a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
They've
You're
put
right.
at least one in, and it shows they're a professional publishing company. They know what they're doing. But they need – and this is part of why I think it's so fun to watch – IDW, Boom, and Dynamite and stuff, and these publishers that are really kind of clawing their way for where they're at in the industry, staying there, growing, etc., they make very interesting moves. Again, going to being a premier publisher. That was exciting to watch and see how it panned out. I think it worked well for IDW.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I think, in a much stronger position creatively and in terms of the sales and stuff that I'm seeing than they were a year ago, and I expect they will be much better, I would hope, a year from now.
You know, going back to Star Trek with IDW, I think it would help them if they would somehow get the license from Paramount to work on a comic series with the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek universe. You know,
that's a great idea.
They brought it out. They did the little Spock thing. They did, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And what do they do? Their next big project, I mean, it's a great project, but they do, you know, McCoy Frontier Doctor, which takes place before Star Trek The Motion Picture, with DeForest Kelly being the doctor and not Carl Urban.
Well, you know, and, I think that's and what they do after mistake. That is the Khan Ruling in Hell miniseries, which takes place before the second movie.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't know what they're doing with this.
I really think that they need to tap into the Star Trek fandom. They need to do... I would do a lot more Star Trek books.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily comics. Maybe go straight to trade on some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe start to compete for that audience that are going after the pocketbooks, novels and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could do more with the Mirror Universe, any of the franchises from the TV shows, some of the non-TV show franchise branches and stuff. You know, the New Frontier stuff Peter David had done. I mean, there's a lot of potential. And I think going for the movie, new movie continuity is a good idea, too.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is to come out with enough that there's a steady stream, but without, you know, oversaturating. And I'm not saying they should do a Star Trek comic a week. That may be a bit much, but it feels like they're kind of light on it at times, kind of heavy on it, kind of light.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a way to tap into that bigger Star Trek audience.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, they've got some great properties. I hear they're doing great stuff with G.I. Joe and Transformers. I'm not reading that myself. But they're one that really, again, have that potential to surprise us over time.
Well, and I don't want to get into a big debate with, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars. But, you know, Dark Horse has got that coming out, you know, on a regular basis. And look at all the Star Wars that they have on the list. You know, they've taken actually, that property and done very well with it.
That's a really good point, because if they were to kind of do the same sort of publishing model and mindset with Star Trek that Dark Horse has done successfully for a long time with Star Wars.
Over 20 years now.
There's no reason they couldn't be as successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that same sort of thing could be done with other properties as well. Stargate's another one that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because who has that right now?
Dynamite still.
Yeah, man, they have squandered that so badly.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, they've only had, what, a couple of one-shots? Or I mean, a couple of small series? And
two mini-series. One on Vala Maldoran, the other on Daniel Jackson.
And Daniel, right, yeah.
Like the characters, the cover art kind of not so great. The interior art's much, much better.
Didn't they do, like, photo covers, like pseudo-painted photo covers for those?
Not the ones I got. The ones, were really what I would consider, and I'll get crucified for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyways, bad indie art.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the stereotypical sense, not to say people who do indie comics do bad art, because a lot of them do amazing art. But this is somebody who I felt, you know, at least on the covers they chose, the angles weren't quite right, the likenesses were not too great, it looked a little too cartoony, it was off-putting. It actually made me delay reading the first issue, like the Vala Maldoran, and for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I flip into it, and it's like, wow, this is much better art. So it was ineffective in selling the book, mm-hmm. at least enticing me to read it and stuff.
Well, you know, you just wonder, I mean, when Star Trek gets published at Dark Horse, or they do the TV show on Cartoon Network, or whatever they do, everything gets approved by Lucas.
Star Wars, but yeah.
So I'm sorry, Star Wars. Everything gets approved by Lucas. And so they've got that set up there over at the Skywalker Ranch that everything creative has got to go through them. And you wonder if Paramount has got anything like that set up over at, for the IDW property that they have going.
When DC was doing Star Trek, they did have to get it through Paramount's approval. That did cause some problems. There are some stories that I think Peter David has told over time on how certain storylines he was doing just got completely torpedoed about halfway through because they said, we don't want you to do this. And he's like, but I told you that was the direction I was going.
Yeah, that's too bad, you know, because that would be really neat if they had some major continuity geek just sitting over at Paramount just reading scripts from IDW. And putting it all together and making sure everything's cohesive with the books or whatever, you know.
Well, I mean, ideally you would have somebody at Paramount kind of in that position to help promote both the comics and Star Trek in general. And you'd have somebody over at the publisher who's really into that and making it easy for the licensee to say, hey, approve this or whatever. You know, it's not easy, but it could certainly be done.
I'm going to call up Paramount tomorrow and offer my services for them.
You should do that.
I should do that.
You and about 500,000 Star Trek fans who aren't reading some of these comics, you know?
You know what? Speaking of comics, hold on. Let me grab it real quick. I have it right here. Guess what I picked up on the internet for $7, John? I picked up the Star Trek, the complete comic book collection on DVD-ROM.
I have that DVD.
Everything from July 1967 through October of 2002, and that means everything that has been published in comic form prior to IDW.
Including the newspaper comic strips.
Is that in here too?
I believe so.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's got all kinds of stuff.
It's got everything. I can't wait to dive into it. I got it delivered to me yesterday.
Those things are just a great, great deal.
Yeah, for $7, you know, including all the Gold Key stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, oh my God, I can't wait. It's got the Wildstorm, the Malibu, the DC, the Marvel. You know, this is the way to go. It is kind of the future, you know.
Unfortunately, it's the past. The future is now on the online. And
well, you
I
know
preferred
what I mean,
the
though.
DVDs.
Yeah. But you can still read them on your iPad, though. You know, they're all PDFs or whatever they are.
I would need an iPad for that, but yes.
Yeah, so would I. I would need an iPad for that, too.
I think the DVD format is a really good way to go, personally.
And speaking of year-end numbers, hopefully we can get some kind of year-end numbers for digital. I mean, I don't know who was in charge of that, if Comixology or
the problem
know.
With that is you've got too many different vendors. They would only be able to give you what's in their store.
I know.
And it goes back to the origin of the index ranking system.
Yeah.
The index value predates Diamond Comics distribution. It was originated by Milton Greep over at Capital City when at this point there were literally dozens of distributors. He needed a way to convey to his retailers, this is kind of how things are stacking up compared to each other. If you're ordering X of Batman or Uncanny X-Men or whatever title, you might want to order X times 2 or X times 1/2 or whatever of this other title.
Right.
Because that's kind of how it's going nationally. But he didn't want to be giving out, I'm selling Z copies of this thing and letting his competitors really know how his business was doing.
Right.
And I it made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the same thing needs to get done to a degree through the digital stuff. I think it would behoove the digital vendors to coordinate amongst themselves, funnel into a single spot, have a single this is how digital comics are selling. Because it would help give a certain amount of, I don't want to say credibility or whatever, but visibility into that, and it would position them better going forward.
Right.
Because right now it's really nebulous as to how well is digital really doing? Has it really caught on? Should people cut over to it or not? I don't know. You know, it would be interesting. I would love to know how individual comics and how titles and so forth are selling online in the digital realm.
Well, and now that, you know, and since, I mean, we've had digital comics around for a long time, but it seems like when the iPad came out almost a year ago this month, right? It came out in January or February or something like that?
I thought it was a little later in the year.
A little later. Well, we've had almost a full year of the iPad, which has really helped launch a lot of companies and put, you know, guys like Comixology on the map. And, you know, they're joking about it on the 11 o'clock comics on their year end about, you know, whatever happened to a Longbox Digital. You know, they had this giant plan and they kind of fizzled out right away.
I still don't think the business model has been figured out for digital comics. I think they're charging too much. But when we had this discussion last year, I think I was still of the mindset of trades might be the way of the future. Comics may go, you know, eventually too low in sales to justify. Mm-hmm. I am in a completely different, you know, thought this point in time. I think trades are just as endangered as print comic books.
Mm-hmm.
I think digital, if there is a holy grail horizon or whatever, it might be that. But I'd need to see how things are selling. I need to see has the shiny new aspect of it already worn off. Did people who flocked to it at the beginning, are they still coming back? How is that doing?
Mm-hmm.
Are there repeat customers? All that kind of stuff. But frankly, you know, I'm looking at some of these sales on the year end, both on the comics and the trades, and particularly some of the more recent sales on the monthly side. And you know, I've got the same thing, and it goes against what you were saying at the beginning of this episode of looking for the happy, you know, upbeat side. I'm worried on some of this.
Yeah. No, I can see that too. Yeah.
And, you know, if we can use digital to get new readers, that's great. Are they going to go to the print? Don't know. But I would love to add digital statistics and stuff to the analysis I'm doing here. If there's anyone working with some of the digital vendors and stuff who would be willing to hook me up with the data, I would love to include that, because I think it is a very important section of the market that really came into its own and went from being a, yeah, it's kind of sort of out there, to it is definitely out there and it is a major factor of some degree. Mm-hmm. Over the course of 2010. And I think you're right, the iPad was a major part of that.
Mm-hmm. And with all the Android tablets coming out now, this year slated to come out, you know, it might get even bigger.
Yeah. I mean, we're at the point where, again, digital is real.
Well, and RT announced day and date recently. More titles are going day and date. Kirkman launched everything Walking Dead on digital. Hopefully we're going to get more of that this year.
Yeah, yeah. If I were, with Kirkman, I don't know that I would have launched everything digital at once. I might have dribbled it out and get people into the habit of coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, bam, here it all is, and, okay, you're going to have to wait a little while for the next installment of new stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm also curious how his whole weekly thing's going to work in 2010.
Oh, yeah, the weekly. Did the first one come out yet?
Yeah, I believe so.
It did? Okay. All right.
It should have. I don't know. I didn't get it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. If we jump a little bit further down this page to under row 1100,
mm-hmm.
I've got it broken out by publisher and by title. Again, I've got a chart off to the side there. And if we scroll down, we see a couple of things that have some blips, meaning, you know, they did pretty well in terms of total sales. Now, some of that is just they had quite a few things come out or quite a few volumes on the list. Boys and Buffy, Chew are such things. Deadpool, DMZ. Fables did pretty well, approaching nearly 40,000 units in sales. Actually, is that 40? Hang on, no, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Nearly approaching 100,000. Part of it is I've got the chart from way up at the top of the list showing up at the top of this, so I can't see the top of, 100,000 for that first bar. Hellboy having done reasonably well, because most of these titles are going to have a volume or two. They're going to have a little sliver on that chart because they did a few thousand units.
Mm-hmm.
And really, by having this chart, you could say, okay, you know, Invincible did, you know, 45,000-ish. Preacher did about, you know, 43,000 over the course of the different volumes and stuff. Scott Pilgrim really did well with the 140-plus thousand over the course of the different volumes. Superman Earth 1, again, approaching that 32,000. That's going to be one to see how well it does in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Walking Dead, again, we talked about the 310,000-plus sales. And then Why the Last Man, with over 57,000-ish sales. Actually, a bit more if you include the deluxe edition.
A bit more, yeah, with the trade, with the hardcovers, right?
Yeah. Because, again, I have this broken out literally by title. So Why the Last Man versus Why the Last Man deluxe edition come out differently.
Well, and you can get a sense of just how many X books came out or Batman books came out and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, all in all, it was an interesting year. I think we've got a lot of things that sold okay. You know, the number of items below, we'll say, you know, 2,500 or whatever, that's over half the list of
right.
The top 1,000 items. And really, you know, under 3,000 is about two-thirds of the list.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of things that are selling okay, a couple of things that are selling really impressively. And I think it was not a bad year for trades. I don't think it was a great year. I think what we have noticed on the monthly discussions is, again, a bit of a cooling off over the last kind of 18 months in terms of how individual titles and so forth are doing. I don't think at this point there's any reason on the trade side to completely panic other than, you know, maybe if you're Marvel because they're the ones that seem to be having more of a downward trend.
Right.
DC a bit more even keel. I think it's an opportunity for all the other publishers.
Event fatigue over at Marvel, right?
I'm going to say no. I think it's event confusion.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we talked a little about this. Bob and I talked about it. I mean, really, there's the concept of the event, but then there's what I'm starting to call the incident, which is a minor event.
Regional, like the Heroic Age? Nobody knew exactly what that was?
No, that's a banner. That's different.
Well, you
that's
know what I meant, though, yeah.
I was thinking specifically Shadowland, Chaos War.
Yeah.
Over at DC, the War of the Supermen, Bruce Wayne Returns, things that impact just a couple of titles.
Right.
The problem is, particularly over at Marvel, is they're treating them like full-blown events.
Right.
Hyping them up, doing a number of miniseries around this, and then you look at the sales, it's like, well, Shadowland sold, 20,000 units or something. That's not so great for an event. Well, it's not an event.
Right.
But it sets expectations, and it skews expectations. And what we're really seeing is, without such hype and marketing focus around these sorts of things, a lot of comics just are doing lackluster in some areas. I mean, there's the natural attrition on virtually every title out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing, over time, of course, that bleeding on the trade side, because, yes, we've got a few that do well, volume after volume, but if people are losing interest in title, whatever, they're going to lose it on both the trade and the monthly side.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think 2011 is going to be a very interesting year for comics. I think we've been at the point for the last couple where really every year anything could happen. Digital coming gangbusters and either save stuff or kill stuff, or publishers could just drop off the deep end and vanish. We saw a couple of those over 2010. Devil's Due finally, kick in the bucket.
Right.
After a prolonged slow death at the end of 2009, beginning of 2010. And it'll be interesting to see how the stuff goes.
What was your favorite trade of the year? Do you have one?
Man, that's a tough call because I don't get that many. I don't read all that many. But there were, that Superman Earth 1, I think was entertaining. Again, had some issues with it, but I was impressed with that. Like to see more of that.
I liked, my pick of the year was Wednesday Comics, that hardcover. That was a really nice hardcover.
I didn't get that hardcover, but I could see where that would be.
Yeah.
In terms of just impressive purchase or whatever, I have yet to come close to reading it by any stretch. That Usagi slipcase hardcover lead weight brick that I got.
You picked it up?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that in the monthly.
Yeah, you did. That's right. You haven't read it yet, though?
Oh, no, not even close.
You'll read it in 20 years?
I'll read it when I have time. But yeah, well, it may take me that long.
Exactly.
It's big.
It's huge, man. I still want to get that 75 years of DC for 18 pounds of paper.
Yeah.
I don't know where the hell I'd put that. I'd have to put that in the garage. Seriously, put it in a box, put it in the garage.
There's some that are just too big to...
It's huge.
...to know where to put, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, or you want to wrap it up?
I think that pretty much does it on the trade side, unless you got something else.
No, I think I'm good. Bob missed out.
Yeah, I think so. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied.
Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.